Blog Talk Radio.
Soldier of Love from the Soldier of Love album. I am so glad you're here this evening. We have another quick program for you. We're going to change up our topic this evening. I encourage you to check our archives for the conversations that we had for the previous two programs, which was about the hypertension, PTSD, inflammation, and really great information that can be applied to our lives on a daily basis in terms of solutions. So we're going to shift the focus this evening, and we're going to have a conversation about the Zika virus, something that's a hot topic in the news in South Florida and beyond. And we wanted to take a moment and just find another perspective. We'll look at some of the information that might not be accessible through the regular, everyday mainstream media. So we encourage you to call in 516-387-1741, 516-387-1741. You can go to our show page, which is blogtalkradio.com/dimensional-healing. This program is the outgrowth and sponsored by Dimensional Healing that was founded in 2006 by Ma'a of the Fig Tree and Ya Elohim. Big up Ma'a. So here we go. So we wanted to just start by opening up the line for our co-host, Dr. Jatha. Opening up the line now. Welcome.
Greetings.
Good evening.
Greetings and salutations. Fine, thank you.
Oh, great. Wonderful. So I'm so glad you're here this evening because I love the conversations that we have. And what we want to talk about this evening actually is Zika.
Clinic for
so being located in South Florida.
And to reach Dr. Jatha directly, dial 786.
Hold on. A little technical challenge there. What we want to do, because we are in South Florida and the Caribbean, you know, we want to look at Zika, what Zika is and how does it affect us, and is it relevant or is it just another hype in the news? So that's our conversation. We're also going to talk about some of the strategies that have been used for Zika and look at their effectiveness. I will place in the chat before the close of this program all the links for any information that we'll be presenting during the program. You want to be sure and check the show page for the complete program because this shuts down in 24 minutes and 46 seconds. But if you go to the show page and listen, you can get the full program, even if it goes beyond the 30-minute episode. So we want to encourage you to go to our show page, blogtalkradio.com/dimensional-healing, and get the entire episode. So, Dr. Jata, let's start with a general conversation about the Zika virus. Has that affected you being in South Florida? Have you seen any personal or professional encounters with Zika?
I have had a couple of people, one that came from Jamaica recently that had some symptoms are so general that you really don't know how to categorize it, but she had a rash and increased temperature, irritability, and so forth. And the fact that she had traveled out of the country to an era like that, she was concerned that it may have been Zika. However, plus there was another client that came by that was a little concerned of, again, skin rashes or a mosquito bite. But definitively speaking, it's very difficult to really, as a physician, to say that this is that or this is not that. So I have had some occurrence of it here directly with me. The topic is a very volatile topic, and it's the buzzword now. I think the program is very timely, and some questions that we could inquire into will bring some light, especially for me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, that's what we're here to do, to look at it from different perspectives and to answer some of the questions. And we absolutely encourage anyone to call in with questions, comments, or concerns about Zika this evening, 516-387-1741. Okay, so let's look at the little bit of the general information about Zika, which I will place in the chat, the link for it, from which I obtained this information. Basically, we want to say that Zika is a virus that was purportedly discovered in West Africa, and was inhabited or infecting monkeys. So we have that monkey origin that we are commonly attributed to the viruses and retroviruses that have cropped up over the past generation or so. And so
question.
It was originally discovered. Yes.
What time frame are we speaking about when this was discovered? Can you help me with that?
About the 50s.
Okay.
Yeah, about the 50s, about 1952, and then in 1951, and then in 1952, it was discovered in a Nigerian individual. So from there, there was parts of Micronesia that had outbreaks of it, but in general, it hasn't been, for one thing, catastrophic in terms of the effect. This is something new. Zika is a mild virus in general with most people. There's always exceptions, of course, depending on factors such as age or general immunity. So, we know that, but in general, it produces flu-like symptoms and and that's about it. Most people don't even feel the symptoms of Zika. If they have an averagely functioning immune system, they don't feel it. So, this whole concept of Zika now becoming such a major illness that, especially with the microcephaly, which we're going to talk about in just a moment, we find that it's another focus and a whole more intense media coverage of it, and also by the UN organization, the WHO, CDC, et cetera. So why is that? Well, we associate Zika with Brazil, okay, and this is where the case is. If you look at our show page, for this program, you'll see lots of images or examples of microcephaly. You'll see images of the virus per se, the structure of the virus, and then you'll also see babies born with microcephaly. So as we look at Zika's in occurrence around the planet, we don't necessarily see the connection of microcephaly with Zika. It seems to be more prevalent in a certain area of Brazil. So the questions have arisen, is this microcephaly from the Zika virus or is there another cause?
Interesting question. Can you maybe elaborate for me the terrain in Brazil or the area where the Zika was prevalent in Brazil? Do we have any information about that area, what goes on there, for instance?
Well, speaking generally, it was the northeast section of Brazil, and there have been connections with environmental factors in the same area.
Really?
So some, I don't have the name of the pesticide in front of me, but in the links that I'll put into the chat, the information is there. I have so many links, I can't access them all and keep the studio up. It's a technical issue. But I will place them into the chat room during this program. But essentially, there's environmental toxin or pollutant that has been used, you know, in the industry of that area. And some people purport, you know, or suggest that the microcephaly may indeed come from there. But there's actually a more interesting take on it. And, you know, that conversation is about what is being done about the Zika virus in terms of governments, et cetera, local governments as well as national governments, and what effect is that having on us? So that leads us to the conversation about the pesticide that is being used as the pesticide of choice for the Zika virus. And it's called NALED, N-A-L-E-D. You can Google it, and you'll find that it is patented by Oxitec Corporation. Oxitec with an I. That they've got, if you go to their site, they talk a lot about the benefits of the genetic engineering of the mosquito in order to be able to, you know, eradicate various viruses. So they'll give you all the reasons why this is a good idea. You can go to their site, Oxitec, OXITECH.com. And get a thorough explanation as to the perspective of the benefits of genetically engineered mosquitoes. So when we're looking at these, the factors within this whole Zika matter, there are three factors that we need to look at, and that is the virus, the mosquito, and the pesticide. So when we look at the ownership, because now we know that since 1986, was it, I believe, life can be patented. So we know that the mosquito is patented by Oxitec. And if you can dig through the structure of Oxitec and see who they belong to, you know, you will see purportedly links to Monsanto. So that's the mosquito. Then we have the virus, the Aedes aegypti, the Zika virus itself, which is owned by the Rockefeller family. And then we have the pesticide, and the pesticide is also owned by the Rockefeller family. So when I look at that, what does that invoke? I don't want to just throw my opinion out there, but what does that invoke? If you know that the mosquito, the GMO mosquito is owned by a multinational, which, by the way, Bayer recently purchased Monsanto, which was two giants coming together, but that's a conversation for another program. And then we have the mosquito and the pesticide to kill the mosquito. The virus and the pesticide to kill the mosquito owned by one corporation. What does that involve? I'm putting it out there to you, Dr. Jatta, or anyone who would want to call in or chat in.
Well, the old adage of follow the money is very prevalent here. Everything seems to lead to one door, and the door being the Rockefeller Foundation and the umbrella companies that these people own. So in looking at that alone, if you open that door, where the money would lead you, you open that door, I think you'll find, number one, these are multinational financial institutions. They operate on profit, not for the good of mankind, but for profit. You would be inclined to think that if the poison is there and somebody, the same person has the medicine, it makes you wonder.
And that's such a common successful strategy when we are dealing with a profit motive. What happens is that the strategies that are successful are used over and over again. Profit motive, world domination, or whatever whatever motivation we want to look at. And so it's invent the problem and provide the cure for the problem. And so this is done on a frequent basis, and here it is being offered again, a means of engaging people in confusion, to me, in dis-ease. So we're going to take our two-minute break. We're at just about 12 minutes before the end of the program. And when we come back, we want to look more at the pesticide, the effect of it, and why is it being sprayed in Brooklyn and Bronx?
Interesting question. Greetings. This is Dr. Jatta.
And this is Yah Elohim. And we are the People's Clinic, home of On Point Acupuncture. Remember, we're the accessible practitioners available to you via phone, text, email, and social media. Reach out to us, and we will call you back within 24 hours or less. We are so excited about our upcoming Living Foods certification class from October 8th through October 29th of this year. Learn the secrets of coaxing greater nutrition and turning your foods into nutrition powerhouses. Classes include sprouting and juicing on October 8th. October 15th is the classical, ancient, and modern theories of food. On the 22nd of October, we are presenting fermenting and dehydrating, and we are sealing it up with tonic soups, herbs, smoothies, and other delights on October 29th.
We have a lot of hands-on therapy. Also, an extensive question and answer period after each class. And from this, you will gain confidence and self-empowerment.
And all of those who complete the class will receive certification in Living Foods Preparation. That's Saturday, October 8th, 15th, 22nd, and 29th at 10 a.m. For more information, check out our website, thepeoplesclinic4tom.com. That's the People's Clinic, the number 4, T like in Tom, O like an Oscar, M like Mary.com. Email us at thepeoplesclinic4tom@gmail.com. Facebook, The People's Clinic for TOM. And to reach Dr. Jatta directly, dial 786 1-222-9526 regarding therapies and to schedule an immediate appointment. For all questions concerning registration, location, payment, and anything else, dial Yah Elohim, 561-855-0593. Join us. It won't be the same without wonderful you. See you there.
Okay, so we're really looking forward to our Living Foods class that's coming up in 3 weeks, and we look forward to you being a part of it. There's also an online option we haven't talked about. If you want to find out about pricing, et cetera, contact us, and let's see what we can co-create with this opportunity. And actually bringing that to the forefront, we're going to talk a lot more about solutions on Wednesday's program from 6:30 to 7, but we wanted to take an opportunity and remind you that, you know, the whole purpose of this is about solutions. So we're not going to stay stuck in the problem, but we want to raise our consciousness as to what's being presented and what's actually being experienced. Because if you look at our show page, you'll see that spraying, not only aerial spraying, but on the ground, and you'll see that the people who are spraying have to use protection, and, of course, the argument is that they're being exposed to so much of it that, you know, they have to wear protection. But what is the effect on the environment of daily spraying? It isn't, they don't just spray once. They spray periodically, and this, as we said before, the pesticide of choice is knowledge. And what does knowledge do? Knowledge interferes with the reproductive cycle of the mosquito. So we have two methods of attack. One is the Aedes aegypti male that has been genetically modified, and when it mates with the female, it renders the female's eggs infertile or unable, inviable. And then we have the larvicide and the gnawlid, and the gnawlid. So we're talking about the gnawlid on this particular program. And what is the major effect of the gnawlid? It interferes with that reproductive cycle, and it affects the development of the mosquito embryo. So now we're seeing an increase of a disorder, microcephaly, that interferes with the development of the fetus. So is there a connection? You tell me. So what, Dr. Jata, would you think would be the long-term effect of something? Okay, this is now the year that it is, and the Gregorian calendar, whatever calendar we want to look at, going to be the effect of the amount of these cases. And why are they clustered in a certain area where we know that the mosquito travels frequently? And as an aside, it's very hard to find a mosquito that actually has that virus. They tested 5,000 mosquitoes in the area that's supposed to be endemic with Zika, and they found 3 mosquitoes out of 5,000, which is not even 0.003%, you know, percent. So what's the long-term effect of something of this nature? And if this cause isn't actually identified, what could be the ramifications? I always like to ask you two questions.
I think the jury could be out.
Yeah.
I really think the jury could be out on the ramifications of such fetal interfering with the fetal development of any organism. How do you know how it's going to play out? To interfere with something like that is extremely problematic, and to me, it's very, very scary. How do you know what part of the fetal the fetus is going to be affected by that. And over a period of time, how would that mutate? I really don't have any answers for that. I'm just going on the premise we've established that it does interfere with the development of the fetus. If it interferes with the development of the fetus in the mosquito, and they're saying that it interferes with the development of the fetus in the human being, causing the shrinking of the brain or the lack of the brain development, I'm really lost with this. That's why I'm glad that, you know, we have this show today. Maybe people can call in and give us some suggestions. Where is it going to lead? And why is it the people in Nigeria that first contacted the Zika virus, there's no evidence there of any fetal maldevelopment there in that area. As far as we know. Why did it occur in Brazil? You know, and what I don't know really the stats of the maldevelopment of the fetus in the area in Brazil where they say the Zika occurred. I have no idea how many children are affected there.
Well, in that small area, it was about 3,500, which is an enormous amount, you know, for the population. It was in the 1-2% range, which was 10 to 100 times more than occurs in a normal population. So it was a large percentage. So that's what leads us to ponder if there are other factors, especially as what you said, you know, as you stated, this microcephaly phenomenon does not exist, you know, hand in hand with where Zika appears around the planet. So that's something we're going to have to look into further. We're going to talk on the upcoming program about solutions, you know, for these viral-borne, more natural solutions for these viral mosquito-borne viruses, Zika, dengue, chikungunya, and West Nile. And, you know, we'll spend the next program looking at that. And, you know, there's so much more information that we could have presented, but alas, we're out of time again. So we will pick up the conversation on Wednesday at 6:30, where we'll talk about solutions from the perspective of the People's Clinic. And from there, we will start to move towards preparing for the autumn, because now we're in autumn. And, you know, what organs are those that we need to be nourishing and focusing on, and what are some of the strategies that we need to do to prepare going into the winter? So, you know, that's where we headed for the balance of the month and into October, and along with our class. So we look forward to being a part of it. And I'm going to do something a little different this evening. There is a clip that I just could not fit into the 30-minute program. It's called The Zika Conspiracy. And I'm going to play it as our outrance, and we'll let it go as long as we can. And listen to it by joining our show page, blogtalkradio.com/dimensional-healing, and come next week and provide some comments. This is Yah Elohim. We love you to life, Dr. Jata. Thank you
Good
for
night.
Coming. Any closing thoughts or words for the program this evening?
Be aware.
Absolutely. And thank you for helping us with that. This is Yah Elohim, and this is the Community Love Power Show. We're signing off.
This is the lab at the forefront of the fight against the Zika virus using genetically modified mosquitoes.
We have created a strain of Aedes aegypti, which is the mosquito that spreads dengue and Zika virus. Everything here carries a self-limiting gene. We release males into the environment, and when those males mate with females, the offspring inherit the gene and they die.
What it is, Zika virus. I've got a story for you today, and it's relatively frightening. I have to be serious here. And it's about what is truly causing the birth defects that we are seeing being attributed to the Zika virus, and it has to do with these genetically modified mosquitoes. And it's, like I said, quite frightening if I'm correct. And I would say, in my estimation, that the odds are that I am, based on the evidence that I'm going to show you. So first things first, let me just show you how we got to this point, where the story is right now. This is from U.S. News and World Report and gives you the headline for why this has become such a scary thing to people. Zika disease in pregnant women can be devastating. More than 3,500 cases of pregnancies in Brazil where the developing fetus missing parts of the brain. So the thing about Zika is it's been around for a while. And I'll start reading from this article here. The virus called Zika is named for the forest in Uganda where it was first reported in a rhesus monkey in the 1950s. Until a major outbreak in Micronesia in 2007, human infections were thought to be rare. Now, Zika, sweeping through Latin America and the Caribbean, has been linked to a brain malformation called microcephaly, often fatal, reported in as many as 3,530 Brazilian pregnancies. It's also been linked to the neurological disorder known as Guillain-Barré syndrome. So that is what made this become a global pandemic. And the reason is these shrunken heads, basically microcephaly. But in this article, it talks about how this virus has been around for a while, and it was reported elsewhere without any birth defects tied to it. They first started in Brazil. Here's the quote. In a 2007 outbreak on the island of Yap, a diving mecca in Micronesia, roughly 75% of the island's 5,000 inhabitants were infected. There were no birth defects reported, but that may be because the population of Yap is so small, Peterson says. A much larger outbreak was reported in French Polynesia in 2013 and 14, affecting 30,000 people. At the time of the outbreak, no fetal abnormalities were identified. When they saw what was happening in Brazil, they went back and found microcephaly cases, this doctor says. Now, that is where I'm going to suggest this report is going. Is the first cases, this huge explosion of cases of microcephaly and birth defects, was in Brazil. Now, Brazil happens to be where they started testing these genetically modified mosquitoes from a company called Oxitec. And there are already conspiracy theories out there about how the mosquitoes are spreading Zika and working backwards, basically. Instead of killing off the Zika mosquitoes, they are spreading Zika. Well, that, it appears to me, is not the problem. The problem is the genetically modified mosquitoes inserting their genetic coding, which is meant to disrupt the reproduction of female mosquitoes, and it's disrupting the production of human fetuses. That's what appears to be happening. I'll show you a little evidence of that. Here is a map. This is from Zero Hedge, but it is all correct, so it's all done out for me. I did the background research, and you're welcome to as well. It shows here on the top map where these genetically modified mosquitoes were first released in the northeast of Brazil there. And this lower map shows where the cases of microcephaly were reported. They say Zika-related cases of microcephaly, but the way they are diagnosing it as having the ties to Zika are not definitive. They're suggested in regards to them being causal. They've actually been very cautious to say this is causal. And the reason for that, I'll go to another report here. This is more of a scientific paper. Zika virus and birth defects, reviewing the evidence for causality. And here, the reason they said they've taken a cautious approach, says this cautious approach toward ascribing Zika virus as a cause of birth defects is not surprising, given that the last time an infectious pathogen caused an epidemic of congenital defects was more than 50 years ago. No flavivirus has ever been shown to definitively cause birth defects in humans, and no reports of adverse pregnancy or birth outcomes were noted during previous outbreaks of Zika virus in the Pacific Islands. In that one case, an island of 5,000 people, 75% of the island population was infected, and they reported no birth defects. The first birth defects, I'll pull up the map again, right around where these mosquitoes were released. Let me tell you about how these mosquitoes work. This is from the Oxitec website, and I was going to read you what they wrote here for how it works. Oh, look who joined me. Awesome. Just on time, dude. So instead of reading it, I'm just going to show you a picture and explain it. So basically, the deal is the male mosquitoes are engineered by this company, Oxitec, to have what they call a self-limiting gene. And it's something where the gene ties up the processes of the other genes so that you can't grow, basically, and so it kills the offspring in particular of female mosquitoes. You might ask yourself, how do they breed these male mosquitoes if they have a gene that makes them die? Well, they have an antidote to it, tetracycline. So they deliver this thing called TTAV. It's basically tetracycline, and then it's some kind of protein. And there's pictures here, and this part shows you what the protein is. And then what happens is the protein fills up what they call the transcriptional machinery, and so it can operate. And that transcriptional machinery is what's writing code to keep you alive and make you grow and stuff. And that's how it works to kill these mosquitoes. But again, there is an antidote, tetracycline. Now, first of all, I'm surprised if nobody's gone down this road before, but you have basically an explosion of cases of birth defects right around a place where mosquitoes who are engineered to give each other birth defects have been released in the wild to control a population of mosquitoes. So they say in this article right here, it's a gene variant that has been optimized to only work in insect cells. Well, I wonder if they tested it on pregnant women before they started releasing these mosquitoes into the wild, because I think the correlation is fairly strong. And in case you haven't heard, I'll give you a headline here. FDA has just approved Zika fighting genetically modified mosquito to be tested in Florida. So you might be thinking to yourself, boy, we got to stop these genetically modified mosquitoes from getting out, because if we keep making them, they're going to keep causing these birth defects. And you're absolutely right. You could. So the idea is that they feed these, the ones that they're reproducing, the males, the ones that they are going to release into the wild, they feed them a diet of tetracycline. And that's how they're able to survive. Tetracycline is a very strong antibiotic, not used in humans too often. So some of the conspiracy theories are that the genetically modified mosquitoes are actually transmitting the Zika virus more, and they found a way to adapt and reproduce, because otherwise we wouldn't have to worry so much about these engineered mosquitoes if they stop making them, if they just die off because of this self-limiting gene, which only is neutralized with a diet of tetracycline, okay? Well, the problem is that tetracycline is the most used drug in food producing animals. This is from the FDA. Figure 1A here, antimicrobial drug classes approved for use in food producing animals. And this is in 2010. And you can see tetracyclines there at the bottom of the list. By far the largest component of that graph, about 43%, 44% of all antibiotics sold for use with food producing animals is tetracycline. So you tell me if you don't think there's enough tetracycline out there to keep these genetically modified baby killers alive and thriving. Nature always finds a way. And I guess that's what happened in Jurassic Park. But they're doing a lot of crazy stuff in response to this, and I'll cover that in a separate episode about Zika. The response, which is vaccines, chemicals, you know, and genetically modified mosquitoes. The cure to all of society's ills. This is a really dangerous thing. So, you know, in fact, I don't cover stuff where I worry about stuff, and I'm not worried, but this seems like a big deal because this virus is normally just like getting a cold. The Zika is not a big deal. 4 out of 5 people don't notice any symptoms, and they become immune to it after about a week. It's not a thing. The thing is these babies with shrunken heads. And the babies with shrunken heads are being caused by genetically modified mosquitoes that have been let loose without any oversight. So it's messed up. I say it's messed up. So that's a big story. I came back at you with a big story after doing some smaller stories, appreciated ones. But I'm sure some of you are happy to have me back on this track. This needs to get picked up. If nobody else has talked about this, this is the real deal. So that's what I'm telling you. You heard it from Lift the Veil, and now you can tell other people. Okay, cheers.
It's so far proven an effective tool and one that could be quickly scaled up. Millions of mosquitoes can be bred in a lab like this in just a matter of months.
Although this is a relatively new technology, it's ready to go. We can go to operational scale. We have the production, we have the methodologies, we have the quality control.
GM technology is not without its critics, but Oxitec says its system is safe.
We're also developing exactly the same approach in pests that damage crops or attack animals, and we've got several of those programs started now. I mean, there's so many different approaches, so markets for this technology, and in each case you can do a very good job in terms of controlling the pest, but doing so in a way that's safe and friendly for the environment.